reasonable hour.
You don't want to go to bed at a reasonable hour?
I do want to go to bed at a reasonable hour.
That's dumb. No one does that.
I have to.
Fine. Be like that.
It's my stupid professional life.
Ugh. Whatever.
Ew.
Let's give him a good news.
We got one!
Anyway, hi everybody, and welcome to another exciting adventure of Request the Timeline, our first of 2024. Yeah, it is the first of 2024, but also of season four.
Woo! Yeah.
Yeah, coming to us from our dear, dear friend Nicole, we find ourselves whisked magically back to nowhere. We're weirdly still in 1998. For this,
and it I think is. I was going to say that France. On purpose. France is where the movie takes place, but no, we actually got this one as a request, but we popped it in where it fits in the timeline because it was coming up, so that it is in order in 1998 and by request, and it's Ever After, a Cinderella story.
Yeah, we're filling all these boxes. Miss Minutes gets the episode off.
Mm-hmm. This is a good one. This is a good movie, a good request. Thank you, Nicole. Great.
I enjoyed the shit out of this rewatch. I forgot how fucking funny this movie is.
I loved every second of this experience.
Yeah. This might be a new favorite movie for me.
So much to say about Prince Charming.
Oh my God, I know.
So happy. Yeah. I loved this movie.
Yeah. Speaking of Prince Charming, yeah, so this is Ever After, starring Drew Barrymore and Doug Ray Scott, and it follows the incredibly romantic, surprisingly funny retelling of the infamous Cinderella story brought about by the Brothers Grimm, who we actually see at the beginning of the movie, which I thought was fucking rad.
Yeah, I forgot about the weird Titanic-esque setup.
Yeah, very Titanic-esque. Very Titanic-esque words. Yeah, directed by Andy Tennant. The film was written by Andy Tennant, Susanna Grant, and Rick Parks, who I feel like I know Rick Parks' name, but I didn't look it up. So here we are. But the film stars Drew Barrymore as Danielle, Angelica Houston as Rodmilla de Gent, Doug Ray Scott as Prince Henry, Patrick Godfrey as my fucking favorite character in this whole movie, Leonardo da Vinci, and Melanie Lynskey as Jacqueline. For those of you who don't know, because I didn't know at first, Melanie Lynskey is the woman who has the baby in the bar in Sweet Home Alabama.
Stop it.
I'm dead serious. She is.
Oh, my God. Well, she also is, of course, on Yellow Jackets.
And well,
she's outstanding in Yellow Jackets. And then she's also in The Last of Us.
Yes, she is.
And yeah, probably worth mentioning. We'll talk about the score when we talk about the movie. But yeah, George Fenton did the music for this and poorly. So we'll talk. Dude. We'll discuss. Not good. For your plot summary, it's Cinderella, and that's all you get. We're tired.
Yeah, that's all you need. I actually was kind of shocked that this was on Disney Plus. I don't know why I didn't expect this to be on Disney Plus for some reason.
I didn't realize that it was a Disney movie, which I guess it is it, or was it a Fox movie that's been appropriated over?
Like, probably a Fox movie that got appropriated.
It was a production company. How do we know this or not know this?
That's actually a really good question.
Like, that seems like something we should have Googled. 20th Century Fox. Okay.
Yep, there it is.
Because I was like, why? Yeah. Why did Disney make a live action remake? Because it really is like it's like pretty dead on. So but you know, Cinderella do be Cinderella, so
yeah, that's, she do be Cinderella.
Yeah, it's just kind of like the one story, so it's fine. But you can stream this on Disney Plus, and for one fucking glorious shining night of my life, everything in Disney Plus was categorized as a Taylor Swift era. Because of the Eras Tour being on Disney Plus now, and so Cinderella, or sorry, Ever After, was categorized under Midnights, so which obviously tracks with the Cinderella story. So that was like a really amazing 24 hours in which to be alive. Dude, I hope everybody saw.
They're geniuses. That's genius to do that.
So smart. I wish that they'd left it like that for longer. Like, people are still watching the Eras Tour. Like, you didn't have to turn it off. But
okay. Well, yeah, but it was part of the weekend excitement kind of thing. Yeah. Like, it's not.
I just wish it would be longer than the weekend shot, because now it's gone and I didn't take a proper picture of it, but it was glorious.
I'm sure it's all over the internet.
It's on TikTok. Yeah. I'm like, I've thought about it on TikTok. It's fine. But it was,
do you
it was,
see this dog right now? Just,
oh, baby.
What a fucking drama queen.
He is anyway. Being like really dramatic. Let's go to the timeline.
Yes. A very same time as the timeline we were just in with the last movie timeline.
And that will be in the next movie timeline and the one after that. Yeah. So in the interest of that, we're going to like single fact trickle the historical context. But the year is 1998, and in this year that we'll live on in infamy, President Bill Clinton denies that he had sexual relations with former White House intern Monica Lewinsky and is subsequently impeached for perjury and obstruction of justice for said lie.
Woo! Hey, high five. That was around when I started knowing what was going on in the world.
Ah, yes. I remember this very clearly. Mm-hmm. Like, this, I remember this, like, I'm pretty confident this is how I learned what a blowjob was. So
pretty sure, me too.
Yeah, time to be alive was 1998, the ripe age of 11.
Oh yeah,
we were introduced to this in politics.
What a thrill! Yeah.
This movie receives a 91% on the tomato meter and an 84% audience score, which seems unhinged to me.
I think it's spot on. Actually, like, this movie was critically acclaimed. Everybody loved this.
I guess it was.
I do think 84% is kind of low, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, for how popular this was.
It was weird. I guess this is spot on. It felt strange to have such a big, like, a 5% gap between the audience and the critics, and for the critics to be so much higher on this. I would have thought it'd be the other way around, but it's not, like, insane.
Titanic, obviously, is the Oscar winner. Absolutely nothing for Ever After, which is kind of shocking because I would have thought at least like costume design, maybe.
They got awards and like they got like some Saturn awards for that and a couple other things, but like nothing. Yeah. They didn't have any big nominations even, I don't think. So.
No, and now I'm remembering it's also competing with Shakespeare in Love, so no one would have even noticed the costumes in this.
Yeah, exactly. Like Titanic wins in 98, but Shakespeare in Love wins in 99. So yeah, Shakespeare in Love was by far the bigger period piece for the year.
Yeah.
And there was some other pretty big stuff that came out that was like Saving Private Ryan. There were like a lot of pretty serious movies that were eligible for the 99 Oscars.
Yeah.
Frasier and The Practice won the big TV awards. Top grossing movie is Titanic. But Ever After didn't do bad. They made like $98 million worldwide on a $26 million budget. So not bad.
Yeah. For it being a romantic comedy, not even a comedy, just a dramedy even. Because there were a lot of emotions felt in this movie when I was watching this. Bob, telling you right now, I've never wanted to punch someone in the throat as much as I wanted to punch Megan Dodds in the throat. Holy shit. It was fucking brutal, guys. Anyway, all the way down. There is no sequel for this, obviously, because every 4 years we get a new Cinderella.
Tis true.
Yeah. But let's get out of here.
Let's indeed.
Let's get into the settings.
Yeah, so a couple of notes that we've sort of hinted to, just that to like throw out there before we really get into the meat of the plot, is there is this framing device that was
I like it a lot.
I loved it, and I'd forgotten all about it. So it's like the great 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 granddaughter of Danielle, who is Cinderella, meeting with the Brothers Grimm on her like seemingly deathbed to like talk about.
It's not, though. She's, like, so coherent and so, like, vibrantly telling this story. But, like, it's got to be, like, I want to tell the real story or whatever.
I don't know. But it was really giving Titanic vibes. And it was great. And then she shows them the shoe. And she's like, I was there, Gandalf.
God damn it. Permit me to set the record straight is what she says. Fun fact, this movie does not have a glass slipper. It just has a slipper.
It is a glass heel, though. I think they mentioned
glass. Is it glass heel?
Yeah, there's it's like there's a element of it that's glass. It makes glass sounds when the rain hits it. It sounds like glass, and it just doesn't look like glass, but she says that it is. I think it's like a glass base. I don't know. The slipper plays, for reasons we'll discuss later, very, very little. Like, it really has nothing to do with the plot of this movie. It's really entirely unrelated to what happens in this movie as in comparison to the original. Like, the slipper is not how he finds her. There is no, like, I shall try this slipper on every maiden in the land. Like, that doesn't happen.
I think that's why I like this so much, if I'm being totally honest with you, is, like, they have a fucking relationship before the ball even happens.
Yeah, I'm gonna like not even allow us to be derailed because we're gonna get there towards the end. We'll talk about that, like those differences. I'm gonna stop you right there in a way that I haven't had to do in like many movies.
I know,
but nobody cares about, like, the shoe isn't part of the plot, so I think it's funny that that's in the framing device. But it's interesting that she's like meeting with the Brothers Grimm, and like it's great.
She's like, your story's full of shit. Let me tell you what really fucking happened.
They talked to you about what it was to be Cinderella. Like, it's like, what? The little Cinder girl. Like, and that's not really.
That's not even what the story's called.
She also never once has she covered in any kind of soot. There's no. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah, she is. I mean, they don't say specifically, but they talk about how she sleeps with the pigs, or she's always dirty and covered in soot and ash and dirt and whatever. But
it's. Yeah. Some of the main points are kind of like they do a little bit of what Harry Potter does with the Marauders, where they just sort of like assume that you've read the book and that you know what that's about, and they don't actually explain it. And they kind of like hit briefly on some of these things, like these like big Cinderella plot points that they just like don't really do. And they just sort of take it for granted that like it makes sense to you, which I'm like, yeah, okay.
When they call her, no one actually calls her Cinderella. Her name is not Cinderella. It's Danielle de Bergerac.
They mention the Cinder Girl, though, or that, like, they call her that once.
They call her that as an insult.
Well, yeah, Cinderella's always been an insult.
No, I know, but that's how they identify her. And they even drop it when they have the tea time, or they're having the tea meeting with the queen. And that's how she, because Ron Miller knows Nicole de Glancre is Daniel's mother, but Marguerite doesn't. And so she's like, the one you call Cinderella. And that's when she has her fucking freak out. And she's like, there was a bee.
Right. Which was insane.
Yeah. Just fucking, oh my God. The other thing I do want to point out, and it was like the first thing I fucking noticed when this movie started, was the music in this movie is so on point, except for when it matters. Like when it should be like this crazy dramatic moment or whatever, it's just the happiest, like upbeat, louder than it should be kind of music. And I'm like, the title sequence is really kind of what like it throws you off. But then when the dad dies and then it jumps to 10 years later, it's the happiest music that I've ever fucking heard in a not happy situation. It's so ridiculous.
It was weird the whole way through. And it felt to me like somebody went to like a free AI site and said, like, make me fairy tale music.
Yeah,
and
then just like modern fairy tale music.
And then just, no, not modern, just fairy tale music. And then they did like no editing of it. They just were like, it's probably fine. Like, slap it over the movie. Yeah. Like, it didn't make sense anywhere that it was. There were a couple scenes, like the best you could say about the score for this is that there were scenes where I didn't notice it. Like where it went under my radar was the best that this score did. Anytime I noticed the score, it's because it was terrible.
Yeah, so it was super out of like the only times like was in like a funny situation, like when Da Vinci's walking on water, it's playing like this weird, like tense buildup to when he and her are going to meet in the water. So it's like bloop, 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 like happy, like, oh my God, this is not going to go well for either of them. Or when he drops, I want you guys to know this. I said this out loud when I was watching this. Her friend Gustav has to pretend to be a servant to get into the ball. And so he knocks out, I can't remember his name, it's Toby Mills. He plays one of the bad guys in Captain America. But he drops a flower pot on him from like 20 feet up. And we never see that man again, and I'm convinced that Gustav killed this dude.
Because he died, yeah, because he's dead. I'm convinced
Gustav killed this dude. Like, yeah. He's just like, I'm going to wear his clothes. Like, what the fuck? It's so crazy. But anyway, oh my God, that's the other part where, like, it gets funny. because like the music will play funny at times. But yeah, other than that, it's either you don't notice it or it's like, why am I noticing this?
It was bad. It was really bad. It was just like I really think they should have done a modern score, and like modern needle drops would have made it really good. But like maybe that's too, you know.
I don't hate that they chose to go with a score over a soundtrack, but I do think there are moments where a song could have like landed a lot better than whatever score they picked. Like her reveal at the ball should have had like, I don't fucking know, like some wild shit, like Celine Dion or something going off. Or
I know the correct answer.
What is the correct answer?
And if you know what I mean by this and actually know and aren't just like faking it till you make it, because now you're embarrassed that I put you on the spot, I will be so fucking in love with you. They should have done what Bridgerton did.
I'm not going to know that. And you know that in your heart of hearts.
So Bridgerton is a period piece, right?
No, I know. It's like it's a period piece Gossip Girl.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And they use instrumental covers of pop music.
Oh, that would have been hot, dude.
Yeah. Like, honestly, a lot of the Bridgerton covers are really, really good. And it's a lot like what Ramin Djawadi does in Westworld, but it just has a more, like, you know how he does, like, a Paint It Black, or he'll do, like C-R-E-A-M. Like, but with, instead of being, like, an oldie, westy, shogun-y theme or whatever it is.
In like France in the 1500s.
Yeah, it's like the piano and strings, and it's like more Renaissance-y sounding.
I would have loved that, actually. Yeah. I would have loved the shit out of that.
Yeah, that's what they should have done, and they failed to. And, you know, fucking sucks to suck, man. Like, they could have, you know what the best song is in the fucking universe is Ramin Djawadi's version of Video Games by Lana Del Rey.
Yeah, I know. You sent it to me. You sent that to me.
I bet I did. You know, I spent a whole week meditating in the woods to that, or like 3 days when I was backpacking the other summer.
A week, 3 days, you know. But yeah, I believe you.
3 days
told me that.
In the woods alone felt like a week.
3 days in the woods does feel like a long time.
Alone.
Yeah. I also just want to point out the irony, guys, that normally Lindsay just scoffs at this part of the conversation, and she had notes about this. So that's how you know it's noticeable.
The score has to be like really something for me to bother to put it into the notes. It has to like really stand out for one reason or another for me to be the one that instigates that coming into the notes. And like, yeah, this was bad. So I was like noodling on it. So let's talk about the evil step somethings. Let's get into it. What'd you think of Angelica Houston as the evil stepmother?
I'm going to say something so fucking controversial right now. I swear to you. I think she is the best evil stepmother. I think she is. And I'm going to tell you what, because of the conversation she has when Danielle is brushing her hair about having never known her mom. You can tell when Danielle and her are having that like heart to heart. She's like, I can see your father when I look in your eyes, that she did actually love her dad. It wasn't just a like, this is first station or whatever, despite what she had just said like 2 seconds before that.
Yeah.
Like, she does have a full-on breakdown when he has his heart attack, which, by the way, guys, that's all they don't say it or whatever, but that's how he dies in this.
Oh, absolutely. He had like a widowmaker. Mm-hmm. And like literally. And yeah, she is like really, like, she is nasty, of course. Like, she is genuinely
horrible.
She's
the worst. The only thing worse is Marguerite.
Yeah, honestly, she might be worse than Marguerite. Marguerite at least is like a child being
raised
in this. Marguerite
burnt her dad's book.
Okay, Marguerite is a fucking bitch, but she was a child. She was, you know what I mean? Like, stepmother's going to get more blame in my book. And in no way does anything that we're saying like excuse the evil stepmother, because she's always evil. But yeah, she does. There is this whole thing, like this dynamic in this one that I really enjoy, where Danielle is like actively tells her, like, the only thing I ever wanted was for you to love me. You were the only mother I ever knew. I just wanted you to care about me for 5 seconds, and you couldn't do it. And the evil stepmother is like, you can tell that what she's trying to say is like, you look like your dad and I'm heartbroken. And you get the idea that like, she probably wouldn't have been super nice, but she wouldn't have been so horrible had her dad not died.
Yeah. Maybe, right? I mean, like, you can see it when he has his heart attack and the two of them rush to him, and he looks at Radmila, and then he looks at Danielle, and Radmila looks at Danielle like, why the fuck are you not looking at me, kind of thing. And then he tells Danielle, I love you. He doesn't say anything to Radmila. And so I think that's a big part of it too, is it's just out the gate. She was just jealous of this, mm-hmm. you know, this relationship that they had. Absolutely.
Yeah. She's great though. She did a great job. And like, and I guess we'll save some of the other conversation for when we talk more about Danielle, like her getting locked up and the, like, yeah. you know, the big crux of the thing we'll save, I guess. But yeah, she was.
That's probably one of my favorite parts though. Holy shit. That is probably that. I
when they
swear to you.
Daniela?
Yeah. That is the funniest fucking part in that whole movie to me.
What do you mean?
Are you kidding me? When Da Vinci gets there and pulls the pins out of the door and they're like, you're a genius. And he's like, yes, I shall go down in history as the man who opened a door.
Right. Like, I thought you meant, no, I thought you meant part the part where Danielle is whipped no, and then locked in the kitchen.
No.
Okay. Okay. Right. I'm like, bro, what?
It's good that we're talking about that part though, because I think that's the most important part in the step somethings conversation, because it does show Jacqueline is not a raging bitch like the other two. And you see it earlier in small comments, like they keep talking about how fat she is or she's always eating.
Can I just stop you right there and say, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was, I was like, come on.
No, this is what they kept making fat jokes about her the whole time. Melanie Lynskey, this was a very like common thing to do in the late 90s where like, first of all, everybody was fat shamed. And then second of all, Melanie Lynskey is not like, she's like, sure, she's a bigger woman now. Like, she's tall. She's like, yeah. She's not obese. She's not like fat. Like, she's
by today's standards, you would call her thick, I think, is like the only
sure. Woman. I would call Melanie Lynskey thick. Yeah. Her current 40 something self, her 20 something self that was in this is not any bigger than the girl who plays the blonde one. But you know what the difference is that she has like a full face. They do the same thing. And for anyone who's listening, who's like, I don't know, Lindsay, like relax. Like she was like the fatter one. Anyone who's saying that, they did the exact same thing. Couldn't have been, must have been the same year. And honestly, we should actually review this. Cruel Intentions. They do the exact same thing to Reese Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. Is the homely fat one who has to wear a one-piece bathing suit because she has a fuller face because she was like 18. She has like a little bit of her, like she just has like cheeks on her, which Reese Witherspoon like still kind of does. Like she like, and they painted her as the fat one in Cruel Intentions. Or is like the ugly duckling. Yeah. She was the ugly duckling in Cruel Intentions, which why aren't we doing, is Cruel Intentions not on the timeline? And what fucking stroke were we having when we neglected to put it there?
Because I'll have to look. I'm almost positive it's not though. Actually, I've got it up right now. I can tell
it's not up and it's that not. Is not okay. Can we do Cruel Intentions?
Yes, we can.
Okay. 1999, bitches. I can't wait to get to 1999. Let's
2024 is the year of 1999. I'm telling you guys that right now.
There's no shot that we're getting out of 1999 in the next like 6 months.
No.
But I will put this like under the Matrix before 10 Things I Hate About You. Back to the thing we were talking about. Melanie Lynskey. So let's talk about Jacqueline.
So Melanie Lynskey is Jacqueline. Megan Dodds is Marguerite.
Thank you. So Jacqueline, I thought this was one of the more interesting like things in the movie, because we do get to see, like you were saying, like they, when they lock up Danielle, you were saying like, we get to see how like Melanie Lynskey's not a total bitch, right? Cause she like, first of all, they whip Danielle, right?
Yeah.
They,
like, she's the one that cares for her. Yeah.
Yeah. They do it off screen, but she says, oh, I'm going to give you a lashing. And then the next scene is like Danielle, like treating her whipping scars, which I'm like, bro, like that was aggressive. So, but she doesn't do anything until the very end. And even then, it's very sneaky. She's not brave. She's not a hero.
Yeah.
She's really not. Like, she sits there and listens to it, or the most that she does is like storm out of the room. She doesn't like do anything. She's this passive, like, she's just letting it happen.
I think a lot of it has to do with just Ron Miller as a person. She has a God complex. She's controlling as fuck, you know, she's trying to control and manipulate everything. And Marguerite is bought into this 100%. She believes that the sun sets and rises out of her ass, because that's what Rod Miller has told her since the dawn of time. And you get this sense, even when they're first having a conversation in the beginning, like when she first comes in after her father dies, it's the 10 years later mark or whatever. Jacqueline is the only one that responds to Danielle when she asks if they had a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
And as the movie goes on, she gets bolder and bold. Obviously, it's like the Kroger's definition of bolder, because she still does not really do anything to help. She doesn't help her get out of the kitchen when she's locked up. She doesn't really do anything at the – she definitely does not do anything about the book being thrown in the fire. Or
she, like, looks pissed, but that's it. Like,
she covers her face. She's like, oh, my God.
But she's not – yeah. She doesn't ever do anything. But then at the end,
I think it's fear.
It is. And she doesn't have any agency. Like, I understand that. Like, what is she going to do? Like, and, you know, she's just going to end up being treated the same way. Like, she doesn't want to be a servant. So, like, I get it. But
she grows a pair when they're in court. And she's like, you two are getting your comeuppance right now. And this whole time that no one's really known who I am is paying off. Because they never invited her to tea. The queen doesn't even know who she is.
Right.
Basically.
They're like, you know, I love how it's like not even like she has no value to evil stepmom. And I'm like, you could still marry her off. Like, she could still have a dowry. She could still, you know, it's like crazy that they just are like, well, go have a sandwich, bitch.
And I'm like, they're like, whatever. You're only going for the food.
Melanie Lynskey is beautiful. Like, I hate this. Fuck you, the 90s.
I love her so much more than I did Megan Dodds. Here's another interesting thing that I liked as a facet of the home life storyline is they're broke.
So broke.
She is consistently, she being Rodmilla, is constantly selling shit everywhere. Like, she just takes stuff from throughout the house. She even says it when they have to find a new dress for Marguerite after Danielle hides her mother's dress, which is another one of the most satisfying things in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all noticing. Like, and she just keeps talking about, well, I'm going to take that out of your wages. And it's like, and then she tries to get around it by selling Danielle to the mustache twirling mustache guy.
Which didn't know we were still doing slavery, but okay. And like, I guess they were, right?
It's France in the 1500s. It's used to settle debts and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, that was crazy that was like an element of the story. And then also, definitely Fox, not Disney. And, it also makes sense, though, to an extent, that they're broke. Like, this is like a not uncommon thing to see in Cinderella adaptations, to have them call that out, because for Cinderella to be doing all this work and for there not to be like other servants in the castle, like, honestly, it's ridiculous, right? Yeah. Like, this would never happen. So for this to be the case, like, that she's doing all the work around the estate, it really only tracks if they're super broke, because they don't have other servants. So they do, in Ever After they do, there's like a house staff. It's like a small staff of people. But in like the original kind of story, it's not really, it's like the idea is that Cinderella is like alone. Like in the Disney movie, she has like rodents.
Just mice.
Yeah. So it's like, and the dog, right? But she does all of the work around this big estate. So it does actually make sense if you're trying to fill a gap, particularly if the most common version, which at this point by far was the original Disney
movie. Yeah.
There's a lot more adaptations of it now. You know, even things like Ella Enchanted, like there's other, like there's lots of other adaptations of Cinderella, but at this point in the late 90s, mostly they're drawing from the original animated one. The rest of those mostly came out in the early 00s. So like the Brandy version, like there's all kinds of Cinderellas that are made the a little
Hillary
bit later.
Duff one, a Cinderella Hillary story, Duff which is one. Also a really good one. I like that one a lot.
Yep, that one's really good. But Jennifer those Coolidge. All come a little bit later. So if you're mostly drawing from the original animation, it actually makes sense to fill that gap by making them broke. That absolutely tracks.
I mean, it definitely does. Here's the major difference, and I kind of picked up on this right away when it shows the dad coming home. In the Disney version, it's not a small house, right? Like it is a manor house, but it's not so large that it would take multiple people. Like, it was believable that Cinderella could be cleaning this house by herself, because that's all they're letting her do.
It was actually pretty small. I mean, by today's standards, it's gorgeous, but it's not a castle.
In Ever After, it's a farm chateau. That is a working, operating farm. And the reason that the farm is in decline is she's either underpaying, selling off the servants, or she's let the only ones there are insanely like disabled or old or.
Yeah, they're like 100.
Yeah, they're all ancient. And like you get the sense that there's no way any of them could be working the field at all. We see like the woman who's like 80. Whatever, the one whose husband was sold at the beginning of the movie that Danielle goes and saves.
Yeah.
She's literally tilling the land when we see her, and she can barely pick up that hoe. So it's like,
yeah,
it gives you this impression that it was run into the ground because Rodmilla has no fucking clue how to actually run a household. Well, she just expects to always be wealthy.
Yeah,
well, they're absolutely crazy.
Like they're not like they're just spending all of the money on nonsense. And like
they have no income that we know of, or like I mean, the farm is in decline. The farm has basically some income,
but not enough. And like there would have been, you know, inheritance, but not enough, not to live the lifestyle that she's living without, like you said, hiring more people or whatever. Yeah. So it's like we'll talk about that in short order when we talk in depth about Danielle, because there's a whole element of her motivation, I think, that's related to that. And then there's the blonde one and
Marguerite.
Yeah, my notes say, and she's .. Sorry, I lost my train of thought because of another Prince scene.
Like, yeah. She's, oh my God, dude.
She's awful, but she's supposed to be like the evil step. Some things should be a little one dimensional. I agree. Really funny for the kids, like her freak out when she realizes that it's Cinderella. Like the kids love that scene. Like she's like losing her. She just like finds out that it's Danielle who has been like masquerading as the Countess or whatever. And she just like gets up from the table with the king and queen and just like throws a shit fit like 5 feet from the table.
Has a full on tantrum. Even the queen's like, good heavens, so child. Are like, you
what the
right?
fuck was that?
Yeah.
Who's a bee?
I don't have a section for them, but I want you guys to know I love the king and queen in this
They're
movie.
They're amazing.
They are fucking great. Especially the mom. And I love that the son actually has a relationship with her. Like as soon as he meets Danielle, the very next scene when he returns to the castle is her walking is the two of them walking through this like archway of roses. And he's asking about her and talking about how he feels about her and shit. And like every time they're together, she makes a joke about how divorce is only something that the English do. And you have to choose wisely. And then later on, she's like, that was great. She's like, you got to make a decision about love, but anything is better than Spain. And it's like so obvious that they don't want this contract with Spain to go through.
This contract in the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground.
Like, yeah. Well, and they keep calling it a love contract or a marriage pact or where they say it like a different fucking ways. But then at the end of the movie, when the Spanish princess is having a full-on mental breakdown,
like completely losing it,
dude, just going out of control.
Yeah.
And so the prince is like, this is my segue into Prince Charming, because if you want to talk about character growth, holy shit, this guy goes from being such a dumbass. No, but he gains understanding of the world in a sense of like, oh my God, you actually stepped outside of the castle and now you understand that like servants aren't just servants, they're people. Great. But also, what the fuck, bro?
Okay. I would argue.
This is going to be great. Please. Have it.
Because I had this is my new Roman Empire is this fucking version of Prince Charming. Like, honest to God. And I would posit that he learned nothing. Despite, like, what Scott's referring to is a real thing. Like, he does run back. Like, he'll, like, have a date with Drew Barrymore and he'll run back and be like, new wild crazy thing. Yeah, and for my Wheel of Time people, honestly, he's really giving like Rand at the end of the third book. Like he's really giving Rand at the end of Dragon Reborn in the Stone of Tyr, being like, I know how we're gonna reinvent the economy. Like he's like he has those vibes. Like Rand spends like 10 minutes talking to someone who didn't grow up in like a backwater farm and is like, I know how to fix everything. Like so the prince is really giving that. Like he like has a date with Drew Barrymore and comes back with some radical idea to fix the economy and like screams it at his parents and runs away. But I would posit that despite that, in his seemingly like enlightenment or whatever. He actually hasn't learned anything. I think that my dude is just like Prince Charming, you guys. He feels with his whole heart.
Super does.
Did you read my notes on this? Like, do you know what I'm going with?
I truly have not. No, okay. All I know is that he confuses the shit out of Da Vinci by asking backwards questions that keep like counteracting each other. No, and eventually Da Vinci's like, shut the fuck up.
this fucking character, he is so traumatic. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I know.
All he is just a walking ball of emotion. Like, he's honestly more like Donald Trump than he is. Like, he just is like, he hears something and he feels it so fucking passionately. So let me just, I just like monologue at you. Can I just like run you down?
Please.
The fucking experience this was for me.
Please do.
I could not focus on anything else in the movie the whole time. Like, from moment one that he was on screen, like, I could give a fuck about Danielle. So he's like, we intro to him, and he's climbing down the side of the castle out of his bedroom window. He's snuck out like a teenager, and yep. He's riding off into the night. And it's iconic. Shh. He's dramatically escaping the castle because I just don't want to be a princess anymore. It's like, you could hear him
basically
screaming.
Yeah.
And first of all, I do want to say, like, what side note, and then I'll continue my monologue. I do actually really like the look of this. It all really looks like an animated film brought to life. Like, this is like the OG.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
this absolutely.
It looks good, right?
It did look great. And his cape is so overblown and huge, and it's so fucking not necessary.
Yeah. It reminds, and it's purple. Like, it reminds me of Prince Philip, like, fleeing on his horse.
100%, right? Like, dude.
Yeah, it's really giving animation vibes. But so anyway, he's dramatically escaping his bedroom in the middle of the night down the trellis.
Which they imply has happened before.
Of course, because he is just a free spirit, Scott. He feels everything so deeply, and he just had to get out that night. So he tells Danielle when he first meets her, I wish for nothing more than to be free from my gilded cage, he says to a total stranger and peasant.
A peasant, who knows, by the way. Yeah.
Who knows exactly who he is. He's not undercover. She has already expressly said, oh, I'm so sorry, Prince Henry or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
She knows who he is.
After she accosts him with apples.
Yes, after she throws apples at his face and leaves like a giant bruise on his forehead. And he knows exactly who she is. And I wish nothing more than to not be the prince. And he's just screaming this at random peasants who he's stealing from, right? Because he feels it in his soul, Scott. He can't hold it back. So then this is his first, this is their meet cute, right? She's like tilling the farm and he runs into her and he's overtly the prince and she's just herself. There's no reason for him not to recognize her later. Like, she just is herself.
Which he doesn't.
Of course not. And then she rides off, or he rides off into the sunset with his stolen horse. And
which I don't get, because didn't he have a horse when he left the castle?
But you know what, Scott? He's like, some kind of emotion or whim took him and he let the horse go. I'm not kidding. He was just like, he's like squirrel. Like, he's like at this guy. So he's leaving on this horse. He runs into a brigand. And he's decided to chase after this brigand who is stolen from somebody's cart or whatever that he's found. And so he's chasing this man on his horse and he leaps from one horse to the other horse. And like, he's
no,
so
you
over
looked
the
at
top.
My favorite part. When Da Vinci guilt trips him into going after him and he has no response except, ah!
Oh, yeah, he screams. He just screams. Da Vinci tells him, because it's always Da Vinci, is like, go rescue my shit from the brigands. And he just like stares at him and then just lets out a yelp. And
he literally just yells.
Gets after this guy. Jumps onto it. Literally is a side quest in Red Dead Redemption. Like, it's just 100%. A medieval themed side quest in RDR. Like, he just, it's amazing.
Complete with mobs despawning after he completes it, because when they fall off the cliff into the water, it's just the prince.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's, I mean,
no idea where this other guy went.
respawn, man. Like, it was. So he spends like a really big piece of the movie where he just like rides around on his horse pontificating about the meaning of life and love and like refusing to take responsibility for anything. Like, he acts like he's 21. He looks like he's 50. Like, it's incredible. And he is just big feelings, right? So he's on another date with Drew Barrymore because they go on like 100 dates, right? Where he still is like, she has given her mother's name. So she says she's a countess to something. And he's like, sure,
Nicole
yeah.
Nicole de Lancre.
Sure. And he, you know, Drew Barrymore. And so he buys this 100%, doesn't recognize her from earlier because he was in his feelings, right? He was like really going through something in that moment. So now he's, you know, forgotten her he's entirely. Well, he just, you know, nothing matters but himself. Like, I'm not sure. Yeah. It actually tracks for me that he doesn't recognize her face because why would he? He's not thinking about that. He's just in the moment. Like, he's just living for now. So he doesn't have time to absorb, like, other people he's talking to or what they had to say about anything. So he is on this other date with her. And they're in the library or something. And he is just like openly weeping because of Drew Barrymore's just passion for life. He's just, and he is like so upset. It's just outrageous. He's like,
I've never cared about anything the way you care about.
Yeah. And goes to cry. I'm like, bro, you care about everything more than she cares about her books. Like, you are passionate, my dude. And he's like intimidated by her passion and feels like the need to one up it by crying about how passionate he is about her passion. And she meanwhile is like level headed and sensible and like charming through this whole thing.
The whole time.
I have no criticism of Danielle. Like, she's wonderful. And he is just insane. And so then we get a scene in, it was so beautiful, that opens with him in an abandoned castle and it's overgrown with weeds and he's reading a book and pontificating on life and his hair dances in the wind. And then he goes on to give this like unhinged monologue about passion and freedom and love. And she's actively crying in front of him. Like, she's trying to tell him, hey, he can't come to the ball. Like, I cannot come because she's like, I'm not actually a princess. She's been saying that she's not a princess, but the countess or whatever. But she's apparently a commoner, which we'll talk about in a minute because that doesn't make sense. But back to the funny prince. You know, she's crying and she's being like, I can't come. Like she's obviously having a meltdown. Like, something's wrong. Yeah, something's obviously wrong. He doesn't notice one iota. He is so into himself. He has no does not care. And he is then so big mad when he finds out she's apparently engaged, right? This is the story that the godmother gives for him to like not, or for her to not be at the balls. Oh, she got engaged and she's leaving and she's not around anymore.
For Belgium.
Like, she's gone for Belgium. Like, sorry. He's so big mad when he finds this out from his mom and he's losing it. And like, why wouldn't she tell me? And his mom just looks him dead in the face and just goes, would you have listened? And he's like,
no, of course not.
He admits to being wrong with the same fervor and passion that he does with everything else. And he is my new Roman Empire. Like, he genuinely is like, you're right, mother. I must go. Like, he's, everything is turned up to a fucking 11 for this guy. Like, he's.
Okay.
So I open it to your thoughts. That's my monologue. I love everything about this version of Prince Charming. This is the way.
I am so blown away that you didn't talk about his emo scene moment right before the ball starts. He's literally down in the castle catacombs, leaning up against a window, staring off into the murky night sky. And the king comes down and he's like, I heard you wanted to talk to me. And he's like, I've made my decision, father. And the dad is like, the king is being so fucking chill. He's like, it was not fair of me to put this pressure of love, and you don't have to marry the Spanish princess if you don't want to, and you don't have to, you know, this ball isn't about whatever. And the prince is like, I've made my decision. Hair flip. And then like, so now he's like moody and whatever, and you can see it until Danielle walks in. Because they're about to announce that he's going to be married, which, by the way, I want you guys to remember, for those of you who haven't seen it and those of you who love this movie as much as I do now, Rod Miller has been trying to get Marguerite as the fiance the entire time, and never, not a single time, have Marguerite and Henry met. They have never met together.
Hey, that's right.
He is literally never around.
She's with the king and queen all the time and never the prince. You're right.
And because he's always off with Danielle.
He's in the abandoned castle, like he's pontificating. In the
thrones of passion and
exactly
learning about architecture from dead buildings.
Do you think he'd be good in bed though? Or do you think like, no?
Because I think he'd start weeping the minute he like, the minute that they like made physical contact,
the moment
like, this
of
is the beautiful, this is the most beautiful moment of my life. Yeah,
of physical contact. Yeah, I agree. I tend to think, and it wouldn't be endearing either. It wouldn't be the kind of crying that like really makes it work for you. Like it would be unpleasant.
It'd be ugly. You'd have snot out of his nose for sure.
An early ugly cry. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Like,
and nobody even finished. Yeah, probably. I don't think it would be any good, but no. I do, however, think that with time, he would be highly coachable. Dude,
that man would be. Yeah, he would. If it's Danielle, he's listening to everything she says.
Well, immediately. Okay, to be fair, also listening to nothing she says, but I think he would care about this. I think that she would have his attention.
Absolutely.
He's willing to take everything on with passion, for sure. I feel like he would be paying attention to this potentially. So, I don't know. Tell us your thoughts. Would he be paying attention and take notes and be really good eventually?
I'm curious.
Would he just be like, I had a good time, so it was great? And Danielle would be sitting there like, bruh,
what? She'd be like, did we start or what the fuck?
What is happening? Like, honestly, yeah, he'd probably come in his pants and cry all over her and be like, that was the greatest moment of my life.
That was so awesome. It was everything the church told me it would be. So here's my favorite part. This is the cherry on top. This literally like just gives credence to everything that Lindsay just said. So she shows up to the ball, right? And he is fucking stunlocked. He is like, holy shit. He stops his dad from talking, puts his hand on his shoulder. And then like Moses parts these people to run up to her in the most dramatic, there's no music part of this movie. There's no music worth noting. And he runs up and immediately the first thing that she says is, I have to tell you something.
Oh yeah. And he's not hearing
that.
He's
like, I can't believe you came. They said you were engaged. Are you not engaged? And she's like, no, I'm not. And he's like, great, come with me. And she's like, I have to talk to you, bro. And he's like, whatever it is, my answer is yes. And then just carries her through. He is directly responsible for bringing her within striking distance of Rod Miller, because if he had listened to Danielle, they would have left the room and she would have been able to tell him everything, and Rod Miller would have been like, fuck, I just accosted this girl, whatever.
But interesting, though, I don't think that him having let her speak in that scene would have resulted in anything different.
So the only reason I do is because of his freak out when Rod Miller reveals her, because he still cares about the caste system. He still cares about.
That's what I mean. I think he still would have been pissed. I think it had he still would have been like, fuck you, peasant. That's what I'm saying. I don't think that his like, fuck you response would have been any different had she told him versus.
No, I don't think it would have. But she also wouldn't have been she also wouldn't have been embarrassed in front of court. Because he would have listened to her and left.
Yeah, but I don't think that would have done anything for like the outcome for them. You know what I mean? Like I know it wouldn't have changed anything
because we know as soon as they come home from the ball the very next day, she's been sold to the mustache twirling guy, who is revealed to be some kind of secondary antagonist that we didn't really give a shit about.
He doesn't matter. He's in the movie 1 second.
All it is an opportunity for Danielle to show off how fucking badass she is.
I enjoyed that at the end that she frees herself from this whole situation, like, and walks out just like, what are you doing here? And he's like, rescuing you. And she's like, that's all right.
This is a really good like segue into Danielle. One of the best things about this is every time she finds herself in trouble, she's the one that solves it.
Oh, 100%.
She carries Prince Henry away from the gypsy attackers or whatever it is, whatever they say they are. And
so they have this scene with these like as they call them, the gypsies, right? And they have like a Titanic-esque like party with them where they like party all night long.
It's
with
very these, Jack like, and the Irish and immigrants below deck.
Kind of thing. It's going below deck, right? So he gets to like go below deck with Danielle and has like the greatest night of his life. And then at the ball, when he's like realizes Danielle's there, he says to her when she's like, we gotta talk, he's like, I invited the gypsies to the ball. And she's like
she's like
have a conversation.
Will you shut up and listen to me?
He's like, look, like it's really giving Rand in the Dragon Reborn. And actually, it's not Dragon Reborn. Sorry, guys. It's the start of book 4, not the end of book 3. It's the start of Shadow Rising where
just lost everybody.
Stone of Tear. I know. I just lost all credibility with the whole audience. But so for everyone who was about to send us an email saying, I mean, there were. So anyway, yes, at the book 4. But yeah, okay, sorry. See, this was my whole experience. Every note that I was taking in this, every time I tried to write something down that was about any other character, I was like, wait, hang on. Like, I lost
track. Prince is doing some other shit.
I was like, wait, Prince Henry's back on screen. Look at the fucking passion he brings to life.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, what were you going to say about Danielle?
No, this, like, leads really well into the thing about Danielle. And the other thing that I really like is it shows not only that she is, like, being forced to, like, look after the house and everything, but she still cares about the house and the farm and everybody there and keeping it up. And it's not just like, I'm doing this because I'm being forced to do it. Like, she cares. She wants to know where the tapestries are. She goes and gets Maurice after he's sold. She, like, you know, she's actively, like, trying to keep everything together. And she tells, when we first meet the mustache swirling guy, when they're in the market, she tells him to fuck right off because he offers to buy the house and pay off her debts if she'll marry him.
Right.
And she's like, no, go kill yourself.
Yeah, but she's like, I'm keeping the house. Well, which I think is a really interesting piece of it, that, like, she is trying to save the property. Like, she would happily work the farm.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The goal isn't to, like, stop having to work the farm. She just, like, doesn't want to be treated like shit. Like, all she wanted was love from her mom. Right? So, like, relatable.
We know she has no problem working it, especially because in the beginning when she's still 8, it does a really good job of setting up that she has no problem getting her hands dirty when Gustav yells that he could still, like, beat her and whatever they're doing. And the very next scene is her with some mud on her face, and it pans over to Gustav, and he is covered head to toe in mud. And I was laughing so fucking hard because this kid looked like she just made him get kicked in the face by a pig or something. He looks so disheveled.
Ruined. Disheveled is exactly the word I was going to use. Like, this kid went all the way into the mud pile. Like, I can't even fathom that much mud.
I can't.
Like,
either.
I honestly am like, I can't imagine where I've ever seen that volume of mud in any place. Like, that's insane. But they do mention in that scene as well that, like, when he's like, or maybe it's the next scene when he's like about to leave, but he tells Danielle, like, you know, make sure you help your new stepmom. She's not used to getting her hands dirty. Like, it's like a normal thing around. They're not super aristocratic, which is confusing, I think, in their, like,
the way he, like, is.
How did you marry this aristocrat who apparently, like, really loved him? Like, I think was part of it, right? But
Also,
like, if her mother was a countess, then why isn't she? You know what I mean? Like, I'm a little bit like, why are you a peasant? Like, your family clearly weren't. Like, you just are being forced to do the labor. But the thing about Cinderella has always been that she is noble. They're not royalty, but
no, the stepmother just keeps her down.
Yeah, she's just being forced to do the work. But the family are aristocrats. The family are entirely expected to be at the ball, for instance, to do. And I know that in the animated, it's every girl in the land or whatever. But it's like,
well, yeah,
they are. They're part of that society. Like, they think it's reasonable for them to marry the prince. Like, they are 100% part of that society, even if they're a little bit brokey broke. So it's weird to me that she's put forward in this as, like, not being, especially when her mom was apparently a countess. Like, I'm like, I don't
know. Well, her dad's a baron. Her mom is a countess. Like, she has
Duke, whatever, but
she has that gravitas.
Count. He would be a count if she's a countess.
Well, no, because she becomes a baron when he dies. She's the Baroness Rudmilla de Ghent.
So then he was a baron. Either way, Cinderella not? Like,
that's what I'm saying. When he died, it's clear because she, number one, we know she has this massive god complex. She has to control and be the dominator of everything. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that she would have found a way to rework everything to be in her name and Danielle not to get a single, like, that. And that a big part of that, too, is no one knows her mom. No one knows the status of her mom. No one recognizes that name
as, like, the woman who died 20 years ago. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. So, like, no one – she did a good job of effectively erasing the existence of this family before she became the Baroness again. And so they're like, oh, what the fuck? Like, she's just, you know, it's – because she starts becoming a confidant for the queen, and that's actually how she gets in trouble, is she Jacqueline reveals to the queen that Rodmilla and Marguerite have been lying to her this whole time.
Yeah, it's the one good thing that Jacqueline does. Like, in the end, she does finally kind of tattle, but she never comes out to her family as having done that. It's always a spy move.
Yeah.
It's a little cowardly, but at the end, she does the right thing. So,
yeah. But she does kind of admit that she did it when she, first of all, I love her romance with the captain of the guard.
Amazing.
And they're both dressed as horses and he eats the carrot. That's exactly what I would have fucking done.
I know you would have. I know you would have, and one day you'll find your Jacqueline who thinks that's fucking Jacqueline funny.
Who thinks it's funny as shit.
You just are so lucky not to run into me in that context, in which I would just like raise my eyebrows at you judgily and turn around.
I know you would have.
Cocktail. I would have. I would be the fuck out. Oh, I would be the obnoxious blonde one in this situation. I would be the obnoxious one who's not seeking the prince. I was going to say
you wouldn't even be there for that. You'd just be like, fill it up.
Yeah, I would just be shaking my wine in the corner, just like, dude, what?
Yeah. The other thing I really like about Danielle is, and we don't really see this in a lot of other Cinderella stories, especially after this. Like, we kind of get it in a Cinderella story with Hilary Duff, but she's very intelligent. She's very well read. She's very diverse in her thinking. And a lot of that is like her dad read to her all the time, but it's also like she came from, for her anyway, she came from nothing and has this introspective look on, if you're rich. She even says, like, if you're rich, it must be awful to live among the rich. Cause like she hates them all. She's just like, they're all arrogant and they don't care about any of us or whatever. And that's kind of the thing she ends up teaching the prince, if the prince learns anything, which we know he doesn't.
Which, yeah, questionable.
Yeah. But that's kind of it. Is she's like, you're not seeing the world the way it is. You just see it through these like golden rose colored glasses. And then he's like, oh, holy fuck. You think I'm arrogant? That's wild. Let me build this library.
That's wild.
I love this idea so much.
Well, you know, it was something that was said in front of him, so he's taking it by the horns and he's running with it. Like, he's
that shit for days.
Fucking amazing. Like, I can't imagine how much she would be able to manipulate him later. Like,
for sure.
Like, 100% she is running all France by the time his parents die. Like, absolutely, she is running France. Like, amazing.
The one thing I will say as far as like comparing the stories is, and Lindsay kind of said it at the beginning, but the shoe is inconsequential.
Yeah, the shoe really doesn't matter because they already know each other. And I like that. I like that they have this relationship. It's crazy that he doesn't recognize her from the first scene. It's very Aladdin-esque of like, but you know what? Actually, I take it back. It completely is in character that he doesn't realize that it's her from the first scene. It 100% tracks. He was not thinking about anyone who is not himself ever. So that makes in perfect sense to me. But it's also kind of an Aladdin-Jasmine thing. And then, they go on all these dates and they're like kind of falling in love. And he thinks she's this countess. And the mystery for him is that he can't like figure out who she is for a while. He doesn't know where she's staying. Like, no one has really heard of her. She's this like mystery, amazing countess that
who's staying with her cousins.
Yeah. And he's trying to find her. And so there's really no shoe thing because at the end, he rejects her openly for being a peasant and tells her to leave. She doesn't have to run away at midnight. There is no midnight, despite it being in Taylor's Midnight's era.
The only midnight thing we get is the king says you need to make a decision by midnight of the ball, or I will announce that you're marrying the Princess of Spain. That's only thing. And then like, even that, Henry's like, fuck it, whatever, I'll do this. Like, it's not even like a hard fucking thing. Like, even by that point, the king and queen are like, well, you don't have to do any of this if you don't want to. And Henry's like, fuck you guys. The only girl I've ever loved is not a real person. Bye.
Nothing matters. She's only a servant. Marry me to the crazy Spanish woman.
Like, where's my eyeshadow? Fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be in my tower listening to My Chemical Romance.
He needs some like really heavy under eyeliner. It's like, dude, I love this guy. I want to be best friends with him. Can you imagine how chaotic? Just like, he would make me feel so good about myself. Like, I just would want to watch him spiral. I would do this for a living. I would watch this guy spiral. Like, he's amazing. Anyway, but yes, that is what makes the shoe, and there's no ticking time clock because, like you said, like there's no magic, no rodents,
there's no fairy godmother. Da Vinci does all that.
Da Vinci's the fairy godmother, which I enjoyed.
I love Da Vinci in this, dude. Holy shit. He is so
Yeah, he was pretty. He was a nice through line. He's in like all of the scenes and like there. Yeah. And honestly, he's how they end up hanging out a lot because he's hanging out with Da Vinci and Da Vinci's sort of like.
He's testing the water shoes. And yeah. Oh, yeah. He just kind of like hangs out with Gustav at the end. He's like, let's see some of these paintings.
Hanging out in the woods around her estate. Like he just like, that's just where Da Vinci roams. Like the wild Leonardo. I'm like, okay. Which is like insane because like did Da Vinci even really spend time in France? Like I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he did. Did he really? Okay. I'm like, I don't really know. I'm like, was he like hanging out in France?
Yeah, oh, yeah, he was. He even makes a joke about how they wanted Michelangelo, but he's stuck under a chapel in France, and so they got him as a second choice.
In like Vatican, you mean?
In the Vatican, yeah. Oh, that's in what he says. He's like he's stuck under a building in Italy.
Yeah.
So I'm their second choice. And like he's so humble and funny as fuck. Like he is how I would be if I went back and if I was the smartest person in the room in that era. Like when he opens the door, he's just like, all I did was remove the bolts from the door. And everyone in the room is like, holy shit.
Like
and he's like, yeah, I opened a door.
Like incredible. Yeah. He's
fucking great.
Let's see, what else do we have on this?
That's kind of all I've got.
I have more comments about Henry being dramatic.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Let's see. I guess, you know, what's tough is like, I guess the whole being sold into slavery thing's not great. Like that is, that's like her. It sucks that it's all about Henry, man. So he rejects her and then she is sold into slavery, which she promptly rescues herself, right? Like everything's fine. But he all of a sudden he decides at his unhinged wedding to the Spanish woman, right? Like he decides like that he doesn't have a revelatory moment where he like learns why he was wrong. He just is like, fuck marrying this crazy bitch. I changed my mind about Danielle. And it's like, why? Like what's different for you? Like nothing's different about
her. Is it because this woman next to you is blubbering like a 1950s soap opera? Like what the fuck? Like
screaming. And like with the I didn't paint a good
picture of it earlier, guys, by the way. If you don't remember this scene, they are literally both kneeling in front of the archdiocese getting ready to be married. The king and queen of France are on one side and the king and queen of Spain are on the other side. And this woman is babbling like a brook in the middle of Yosemite,
like genuinely bawling, wailing, not dude, even bawling, just
no, it is full on wailing. Yeah. And it's just clear she is not having a good time. And eventually Henry just, you know, being the mature fucking aristocrat that he is, just starts laughing at her. Literally just starts laughing his ass off at her.
It was one of my favorite moments of the movie, which is when he just looks around himself and with great passion just starts to laugh.
He just laughs his ass off. It's not subtle. He's not just like, huh, this isn't what I want. He's like, he's like
pissing himself like this is insane. And I liked that moment because it's like, yeah, why are we all doing this farce? Like obviously nobody wants to be here.
Nobody wants this at all.
Which is like a weird subplot, like that's like thematically not really, but like the whole like arranged marriage is bad is like not really one of the themes or motifs of the movie.
Oh no, it never comes up except for like he makes like one comment in the beginning about like I don't love her. And then the mom, that's when she makes the comment about divorce. She's like, no one or arranged marriages has never worked out for anyone ever. And the queen actually looks hurt because it's clear that the king and queen love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
she's,
and we're arranged.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he tells her while she's babbling in wailing Spanish that you don't have to marry me. I don't want to do this. Go live your life. And she runs into the crowd with some random dude.
It's not. It's her lover. It's the guy.
I know that. Yeah.
But totally. She does seemingly
making out in front of everyone. And the king and queen of Spain just start domestic violencing each other. Like they are screaming at the top of their lungs at each other and like throwing pillows and shit. And the king and queen of France just look at each other side eye and just start laughing to themselves. They're like, wow, what a bunch of shitty people they
what
are.
What a mess.
Yeah. And then the scene's over. Like, and he rides off to rescue her. And Drew Barrymore's like, fuck you. I emancipated myself, you dickbag.
And there's no reason for him to make this decision. Like, yeah, to not marry this Spanish girl, sure. But he doesn't come out and say, like, I have the right to marry whoever I want. Fuck you. Like, I don't want to marry that peasant girl. I don't want to marry this rich girl. Nothing's good enough for me. I'm going to go listen to My Chemical Romance. Like, he doesn't, like, do that. He just immediately runs off to Danielle with no explanation. So that's, like,
pretty
much ridiculous.
There's no breakdown of the caste system, I guess, is, like, what he's just, like, I love her. And it's, like,
doesn't even really
black
realize,
and white, but, like,
is that what it is? Like, I love her. Like, and it's, and do we believe that after he just so easily was like, what do you mean you're a peasant? Like, well, fuck you. Like, he has no second question because he lives for the passion of the moment. So he doesn't have like the ability. Like, so I guess like, all of this is completely in line with his character. This movie really is about how fucking chaotic the prince is.
You know what it is?
Wait.
I just fucking realized he's sitting next to the Spanish princess who's fucking losing her mind. And he's like, I have big feelings and she has big feelings and we both can't have big feelings. You know who didn't have big feelings? Danielle.
He has out feelings. Yeah. Like, he was intimidated by Danielle's passion in life. He was like really upset by that. Like, so yeah, I guess it makes sense. He saw this and just panicked. And like,
he's like, honestly, holy shit, is that what I look like?
It's wildly in line with like all the rest of the determinations we've made about princesses so far being that like for the most part, they pretty much come fully baked and like already know what the right thing is. And it's really just about getting everyone else to get on board. So like Danielle, 100% like capable, had no lessons to learn, is a great character. Like she was lovely. She was passionate. She was sweet. Drew Barrymore was so good in this.
She was awesome. The one caveat I will say, so that's my only problem. There are parts of this where I have an issue with her accent because sometimes she has it and sometimes she doesn't.
I will give you that. The accent's a little bit sketchy.
Yeah. It's like such a minor thing that I'm not going to really dock her for it, but it is noticeable. Like when she over-pronunciates stuff. Like you would just be like, what do you think you're doing? But when she finds out that they're trying on her mom's dress, she's like, what do you think that you are doing? And it's like, no one talks like that. Even back then, like, stop that shit. Like, come on. But then when she screams at her about how this is one of the best lines in the whole movie, she's like, I would rather die 1,000 deaths than see my mother's dress on that spoiled, selfish cow.
Yeah.
That's just a pure American accent. There is no accent hidden anywhere in that scream.
I'll give you that.
Yeah, but that's it. That's really my only issue with it.
Yeah, she did not do as good a job as Lindsay Lohan did in The Parent Trap, which is a tough criticism.
She was dressed nicer.
She was dressed nicer. And I thought she's a good actress.
Yeah, I love her.
She was endearing. Like her emotions felt real. Like her like pleas of like, I just wanted someone to love me. Mm-hmm. And like, why were you such a shit mom? Like, all, like she was really good in this. But the prince absolutely stole the movie for me. I mean, Drew Barrymore could have, I don't even know. Like she could, there's any number of incredible things that she could have done. She could have won a fucking Academy Award for this, and I still
would have all been about Doug Ray Scott.
About anything with Doug Ray Scott's performance, like just unhinged characterization of Prince Charming. Like I don't know, guys. I really have been. I'm really, 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 really into this. It is so.
I'm gonna watch this again. Like here, this is the first time it's happened in a while that I'm like, I do want to watch this movie again because it is really good.
Again, and just fast forward through the bits that he's not in, and just like, just think about
no, because then you miss Marguerite getting punched in the face,
and watch Marguerite get hit. But otherwise, mostly just watch the prince because it was truly so unhinged. Like I was laughing out loud, I was cackling in this.
I'm actually gonna have a problem rewatching it now because you said that. I'm just like, this man is just big feelings. The movie.
It was awesome. I don't even have like an apropos reference to like some other IP that I'm consuming right now that it like reminds me of, or that's like the reason that I feel so passionate about this right now, which is usually the case. Usually I'm like, no, I fell in love with this one thing because it reminds me of this other thing that we're not talking about. But no, in this case, he really just stood on his own outside of any other hyperfixation for me, just being chaotic. And I am obsessed. So that's all I have to say. Take us through the room requirement. This was Henry's movie, and I love him.
So because she did so well, and you can tell that she enjoyed making this movie, this is actually Drew Barrymore's favorite film she has ever done and has been recorded numerous times saying as such. The real Leonardo da Vinci did actually travel with Mona Lisa. In fact, he carried it with him from its time, from its creation until his death, everywhere that he went. It was always with him. A little fun sidebar for you guys. The movie does intentionally showcase that the Mona Lisa was painted on canvas. We know for a historical fact that it is actually painted on wood.
And you have not seen the Mona Lisa, no?
Not in person, no. My mom is there right now. She'll probably see it.
Oh, is she really?
She's there for her 60th birthday. Shout out, Mom. Happy birthday.
Woof. Have fun in the line at the Louvre.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty underwhelming.
So I've been told. Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. I don't like regret having been there.
No, I would say like you got to see it. Like it's cool. But if once you're there, you gotta go.
But it's like, yeah.
Drew Barrymore does not actually carry Dougray Scott. He was too heavy for her. She had to be assisted by both crew members and a wire team when she carries him away from the vagabonds or whatever they call them in this movie. They're called brigands and all this different shit. I don't know.
Whatever that scene was. I mean, I don't even know. Like, yeah. I can't remember. They get overtaken by
the dude he fought the off the cliff. That guy just comes back.
Sure. Yeah. Brigands.
Yeah, brigands, whatever the fuck. And then the last one is throughout the I actually really like this. I love hidden imagery in movies. And throughout the film, Baroness Radmila de Ghent wears headdresses that often resemble halos, representing both her god complex and the irony of her hidden cruel demeanor. It isn't until the ball where she inexplicably wears a headdress that resembles two devil horns that her true personality is revealed after she accosts Danielle and everyone gets to see the real her, which I really like that.
Makes a lot of sense. I like it. They should have hammed it up more.
I agree. Very much agree.
What did you rate this?
Oh my God.
I haven't written anything down. I haven't made a decision. I'm going to decide like on the fly. Like what? But what did you think you were going to give?
Honestly,
about?
With like how much fun I had with this, I might actually give this a 9. Like it's just fun. I don't have any major problems with this.
I'm actually with you. Like I could give this like I don't know that I can give it a 9, but I can give it an 8.9. Like an on principle. But I also want to give it like 6.5 blue Twitter check marks or something. Like I'm in between being like, this thing is so fucking good. Like I legitimately want to give it an 8. Like if I'm being serious, I would give it like an 8.9. Like I actually think this was really good. But if I'm not being serious, which this movie wasn't for a lot of it, I don't know, man. I think I have to rate the movie differently from The Prince. Like I really believe Drew Barrymore gets it. How about this? Drew Barrymore gets a 9.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right. That's fine. Okay. Drew Barrymore gets a 9.
Prince Dramatic gets some number of blue Twitter check marks. Like that's he's in that system.
The Prince gets 9 Welcome to the Black Parades.
Okay. 9.5 black eyeliners.
Black eyeliners out of 10.
Honestly, just like he gets 9.26 erratic decisions out of 10. Like he's like, I don't know. I really like.
He gets 7 out of 6 big feelings. I
7 out of 6. That's right. Like I was like, I really don't know how to think of this movie in one way. I'm really of two minds of it because everything when I take him out of the equation, I can be very like,
it's a great
I thought
movie.
It was beautiful. It was sweet. It was like, it was a great adaptation of Cinderella. Like this is how you do a live action remake. It was, it was like filled plot holes. It wasn't perfect, but it was really good. And then you see him and it's Prince just Henry. Like, my God, okay. And the fact that there's no way they would be together. None. They have nothing going on in common. Like he's just there being chaotic. And she is just sitting back. Like she's so calm. She's so measured. She's so together. She has her priorities. She knows what matters to her. Even honestly, like when they're going to break up, she's like, whatever. Like I'm going to go home and take care of my land. Like Tara, you know what I mean? Like she has like a focus. And then, and he just is over, like, they would, in a million years, they wouldn't be together. She's not.
No, I'm just realizing.
Like, it's crazy. It's like, what?
The reason that they work and they end up together is that she is the queen and he is the king. Their characters mirror each other. Like the dad is the king is so hot-headed and like quick to jump on his emotions and shit. And the queen is always the one that's like, let's settle the fuck down. How about that?
Let's everybody take a deep breath.
Like, why don't we all just get some air at different parts of the castle? Like,
and he's like, I'm going to Belgium for like a weekend. I need to get out of here. Fuck you. Like, fuck this.
You know, I've broken out of some castles before. I've climbed down walls. She's like, sure, you have, huh?
Oh my God, the way that he's introduced to us like that, like his dramatic climb down the castle wall. Like,
I still want to know what happened to his horse.
My God, I'm telling you, he sold it on a whim, a whim took him and he lost the horse. So anyway, this was exactly my experience watching the movie. I would like get onto one thing and then be just back to him. Like I just could not take my focus from this guy. I just am like, it was really something. Like for a character that I was not attracted to and felt like probably like, you know, like sometimes my focus gets stolen by something really sexy, but this wasn't that, listeners. This isn't that distraction. This was like, honestly, this is one of the shortest episodes we've ever done. And if you cut out me ranting about this characterization,
probably about 11 minutes long,
a 10 minute episode. Like I was so taken by this interpretation. Like I'm like, what movie is this guy in? Because it's not the movie that I'm watching.
It definitely so, like Nicole, the
thank you for giving us this fucking blessing that was watching this character. Is like, I will die on this hill. I will never get over this. For as long as we podcast, if we discuss royalty, I will be bringing this guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, this is the decades. Bar.
We're going to do it. So this is a good way to bring this up. Like, I'm going to get us out of here, but
please do. Cause I could keep going.
I know. As always, guys, thank you all so much for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed yourselves and learned something about how to create an incredible 2 movies in 1. Join us next week for A Bug's Life, where we get even more royalty of someone who doesn't want to be royal. But I doubt she's got big feelings like Prince Henry.
I don't think we're ever going to see his like again.
No, I don't think we will either. And when we do, it's going to
watch funeral.
Dude, if we ever do, we're going to shit our pants and be like, this is Prince Henry 2.0. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as follow us on all of our social media. You can find the links for our sites and social media in the episode descriptions. If you'd like to support the podcast, we do encourage you to follow us on Patreon, where you can find all of our show notes for each episode. We've got awesome shit coming up pretty soon. I just have to work out my schedule. But make sure to check out our website for all the timeline goodies, including Request the Timeline. We did this one on Nicole's request, and we'll do it again for you too.
Yeah, Nicole, your requests have been fire. Oh, yeah. Nicole is the listener who gave us Titanic, and we weren't necessarily going to hit on that. So, like, Nicole, what else you got? Because this
for real, hit me with some other shit, because we've got plenty more coming up. But until next time, guys, stay nerdy.